Morning, church. Take your Bibles, turn me to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. I want to walk back a period of about 3.5 months and talk to you about John 8:32 for a minute. You should know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. This verse has driven my theological life for over 3 months now. And if I'm being honest, I don't see it going away anytime soon. It's not that I don't want it to. It will not leave me alone. And the very first of this verse, we went through a series of lessons from Ephesians 1 and 2, where I tried to work methodically and exegetically through those two chapters to see a point that was coming before me continually. That sermon series became an idea for me because of my political reading. I want to be very honest about that. At no point will I ever use my words to garner a vote for a man. And when I say it, my political readings, I'm telling you that I saw a problem in my reading, that I had seen something like this before and chose not to speak up. And I'll tell you exactly what that problem was. I don't know how many years ago I began to read things and it say that we are a divided country. I bet you've heard that. I bet you've read that before, haven't you? Right? That we are a divided country. Well, I began to see politically that we weren't talking about being a divided country anymore. We were talking about being two different Americas. And that image comes into my mind, and it began to seep with me, and that scares me in numerous ways. I was not alive a long time ago when our country was trying to be two different Americas. But I hear and read it wasn't a good thing. And so it brought me to the idea of the church. And in the church where Paul literally loves the people. It talks about how we are to be diverse. And that diversity is not only the idea of southern segregation. It is the idea of we are diverse as a people. Not only by race or gender, but we are diverse in numerous ways. We're even diverse when it comes to certain issues. I don't agree with everyone in this room. I don't agree with y'all. I can prove it to you quite quickly. I'm married to a woman. If you are married to a woman, my wife is the best wife in the world. The best she could be is second. The greatest state out of the 50 states that are in America is M-I, crooked letter I. You understand? We don't all agree in this room this morning on stuff. And not only that, but about other things. Even things politically. And in this room, Paul tells us in Ephesians, we are the body. And those things are overcome by our equality in God, in Christ, that he has given us. Then I move from that to the idea of Daniel and transitions. And what I consider one of the biggest issues in the world today. And it comes also from reading. Have you ever heard of gender fluidity? Have you ever heard of that? Now, you may think I'm thinking about some other stuff here, but just walk with me for a minute. When you hear words like gender fluidity, you may think that's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. Nothing new under the sun. It's true or it's not true, or it's both. Depends on what you're talking about. Smartphones are sort of new, right? Gender fluidity is what I would call the culmination of a long time coming. We have done everything we can to erode every barrier, every intolerant thing in the world. We have now gone past the millennials where we call their parents helicopters to Generation Z where we have really stepped in for our kids. Every teacher that has ever given our child a B, we've run in to scream about, right? We've even gone past that. We have eroded so many boundaries. I think about the great expositor Warren Wiersbe who said, "You should not tear down a fence until you know why it was built. There may be a bull on the other side of it." We have eroded these lines of our identity, and we have come to the full culmination of that in our society. There are no rite of passages. This began to happen years ago when we began to erode the lines of adolescence. We do not have a moment where a woman becomes a woman or a boy becomes a man, if you will. And we are now coming to about all of this, and I believe within the church, it's just as big a problem as it is in the world, that the identity crisis that our children are going through is not going to end anytime soon, and it's going to lead to even more tragicness in our country, if you will. And so I thought about the idea of us as humans walking in transitions. And I think Daniel is there for us. I think Daniel is the book in the Bible that can help us deal with transitions. And transitions are things that we don't always choose. There are transitions that you choose. I hope that you chose marriage. Yeah, I got married. That's where I had to kind of deal with. I hope you chose that, right? I hope that's a transition that you experienced in your life. But sometimes transitions happen that we do not choose, but we still have to walk. We have to walk in them. And so last week we walked into Daniel, and I began by a little quick Jewish history about how many different countries had ruled them during the Old Testament time and how they had been dominated, and they would wake up and be told what to do in different moments of their lives. And Daniel walks in, if we take this view, if we understand Daniel properly, then there are two different periods of times, two different people that are ruled, that rule the Jewish people at that time. And they have to figure out how it is they can walk in this world that is just all tumultuous and still be God's child. The double identity. How do they maintain their Jewishness? So we walked into that talking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I told you last week, even having said their names 2 weeks ago, having said their names, you don't know their Jewish names. Some of you in here probably do. I would say the majority could not get 2 out of 3. What are their Jewish names? We know them by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and that means culture worked, right? Their Jewish identity had sort of been eroded away. And we walked into that burning furnace with them. And I believe that we learned something from that moment, that there are times when we need to be emboldened in our faith. This transition that happens for us, no matter what it may be, there may come a time when someone tells us to do something we should not do. I sat down and I thought for a long while, about 5 days ago, about unethical behavior in the workplace. Unethical behavior in the workplace. I'm going to be fair with you. Most of you have worked in the public sector much longer than I have. But I can tell you, in the short period of time that I worked there, I was asked to do unethical things. And I did them without a doubt. Just no question about it. The boss said it, we did it. I think about Grady. I thought about Grady this week. He works for the Tennessee Department of Transportation. Those people that are in orange trucks, and every time you see them, they're in their truck watching other people work, right? Trust me, those people are needed, because those people paving that road are sometimes told to do things that aren't ethical. And if he wasn't there to watch, then they wouldn't be doing ethical things. And I think about, what about you in your workplace? Have you been asked to do unethical things? And here, what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego teach us is that there is a moment when our faith should be emboldened and we should approach that situation. 2 weeks ago, I walked into a Bible class after my lesson, and I heard someone say, "Sometimes you need to lose it." And that makes me happy and sad at the same time, because I agree with it. But also, that could never be an excuse for me. When I lose it, most of the time, I should not lose it. I've been in a war against mean people my entire life. The problem is, you want to know what I've returned meanness for? Meanness. And that's not right. So I don't need a reason to lose it like that. But truly, in our faith, when we see injustice or wrong, we need to act. There are two more passages I want to look at this morning from Daniel to talk about transitions as we walk into a transition in our life, chosen or not chosen. Some things that can help us maintain our faithfulness. I tried to start last week again by bringing up a political reference. Not because I'm trying to sway anybody, but to let you know that God's people have to walk in the middle of both. I'm not telling you that you have to be politically in the middle. I'm telling you that you have to walk in a world where there are both. There are both the conservative and the liberal. If you want other terms, there's many terms for both of them. And most of the terms past what I've just said are mean terms, whether it be closed-minded or progressive, right? You see, these words that we use are sometimes used for, well, God has called us to walk in a world where there's both. And what's important to us is that God is first in our lives, and we allow the world to see God through us. That's it. Politically, we vote for who we vote for. We all have thoughts. We all have thoughts. God has asked us to walk in here and be equal. The first thing I see in Daniel will be in Daniel chapter 1, and it's not the name thing. It's how Daniel responds to the idea of food and wine. Because see, the king has brought in these young boys. If we were to have to guess an age, they're going to be around 14 years of age, by the way. Thinking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, around 14 years of age. That's the best guess. And around this period of time where they are called in to be educated by the king, they picks the best and the brightest. He's not choosing someone who is not the best and the brightest. And he brings them in, and he wants them to be well fed, so he gives them food and wine. And that's where we walk into the story of Daniel in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this. He tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guards took away their choice food and wine, and they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead. Do you see how Daniel handles this situation? Again, this is a situation that absolutely confronts their theological thinking. This is a moment where they are asked to do something. And this isn't one of those rough moments. We're going to need you to cut your toes off. Oh, please don't make us. No, this is one of those moments where, hey, we got some great food. It's the food from the king's table. I mean, this is some good stuff, I'm assuming. And this is the king's wine. I'm assuming it's the best that the king can get. And he's offering it here to them, and they are confronted because of the food restrictions in their Jewish teachings. And so here's one of those moments where identity, again, is confronted. And how will they handle it? I think back to that idea of gender fluidity. The first time I read that, I had to literally just sit down. I was probably sitting down already, but I'm talking about really sit down. Like, what did I just read? And I thought immediately, there's nothing new under the sun. I thought, that's a pretty new thing. I don't know that I've ever read any of that. I believe homosexuality has been a part of the world since the world was almost in existence. We can go back as far as we have historical records, and we can find some of that. But this idea, what is this about? We used to call that, I thought immediately, someone had multiple personalities. But this word, and immediately it came to my mind, Ben, you've seen this coming for a long time. This is the identity crisis that we are continually perpetuating. They say in our country, the college experience has really, really gone into decline. That the people there are not showing overall happiness and really don't know what's going on. And again, 15 years working with millennials, let me tell you right now what's going on. They wake up in the morning, they pick up their smartphone, and they look at their smartphone until they get to their class. They get in their class, they put it down for a minute so the teacher will start. Then they pick it back up, and they will enter their room in a few hours, again, using their smart device. Now, I'm not here to rail against the smartphone. I'm not here to talk about texting and Instagram and Snapchat and all that other glorious stuff that the majority of people in this room use. I'm not here to wail against it. I'm here to tell you that we have created in our culture a crisis. And we don't know who we are. So how in the round world can we educate our kids who they are? You want to talk about esteem and insecurity? We're going to be the most low self-esteem, most insecure country in the world in the days to come. As God's people, we have to do something. He has given us an immense responsibility. I don't know the numbers, but we are very high on millennials here. And you know what millennials means, right? That means babies. We got babies, babies, and more babies. We've got so many babies. I'm telling you, sometimes I heard one of our classroom has on their roll 27 kids. One class. And it's like 3 and 4 year olds. I think I don't really know the age. I'm not saying that there's 27 here every Sunday. I'm just saying that there's that many on the roll. Now let that sink in what God has blessed us with this morning, church. And that calls for a huge responsibility. And we are to raise these children as a tribe. I'm not telling you that everybody's got whooping rights. Okay? That was a family law that I wanted to do away with. I had to tell all my, please don't whip my children. Just call me. I'll be glad to beat them in front of you if it needs to take place. But when I was a kid, everybody whipped me and had rights to do it. Nobody could get mad about it. And I was like, I don't want that. So I'm not saying we all got whooping rights. I'm saying we have a God-given responsibility to raise children up and talk about identity. And parents, before you can go wailing on your children about their devices, you need to pay attention to your own device. We need to make sure that we are instilling in our children the idea of God. God meant so much to Daniel that he confronts the food and wine. And did you see how he confronted it? Brace yourself, brethren. This is one that I think probably does not come to mind first. When confronted with what we can call it a rub, we can call it maybe a difference in opinion, a heated situation, but what we see Daniel confronted with is kindness. Kindness and straightforwardness. Just straightforward saying, look, we don't need to do this. Is there another way? Can we do this? And the guy's afraid his life is going to be taken. More than likely in this situation, we've got a eunuch, a man who has dedicated himself to the king, and he knows what the king is capable of. And Daniel says, give us 10 days. And of course, they come out looking better in that situation. But how different would your world be right now when that transition of life comes? In that moment, in that transition where people challenge your identity you found in baptism, what if you confront it with kindness? And I say this a lot, but I want to continue to say this. There is that biblical verse that we sometimes abuse. Oh, yeah, kindness, that's it. Just heap it on them. Heap it on them till they get more angry than you are. That is not what that verse means. It's like we also use that word about that verse about impure words and how we always want to go there to this cuss words. The cuss words are words that our society has deemed as impure. And I'm not trying to tell you that these are words that you should ever use. But impure words means when we use our words to tear someone down and not build them up. When we use our words to be ugly. When we use our words to talk about things that shouldn't be talked about. That's what God says. And what happens in your life right now if you confront the rubs in your transitions with kindness? As we move forward, the next one is a little different for me. And this was in Daniel chapter 6. This is a story where I know every one of you who have grown up in the church loved. Well, I say that, I have to say this might be a gender thing, I don't know. But it's one of those things for me, when you talk about the burning bush, every boy in that room is going to be excited. I don't know why men love fire. I don't know. I could tell you, I could stare into a fire and get lost. I don't even know why. Like, that is awesome. And another thing that I think boys get really excited about is the lion den. Now, I want you to understand, I don't mean that they understand what the lion's den truly is. That this was a moment of complete torture used in times past. But they think about the lions, right? And Daniel. Oh, Daniel. Daniel is confronted in this situation. And it is by a group of people who are absolutely jealous. And brethren, the jealous people have built a coalition. They have built a coalition. I don't want to go into all of this. I mean, I could read this entire chapter, and I suggest that you spend time in the upcoming week in Daniel chapter 6. He appoints the traps, but without going through all the government. If you'll think about a mayor, I think that if you'll think about a mayor, there are 120 of these men appointed, okay? And then there are three men appointed over these 120 men, okay? And these 120 men, Daniel finds favor with the king so much so that he's going to put him, Daniel, over all of them. Daniel is so great. He's going to take care of all of y'all. Well, this didn't go too well with the other mayors, if you will. So they get together and begin to form one of my worst enemies, a coalition. My opinion may not matter, but if I can build a bunch of people that share my opinion, we can destroy the world. I don't know about you, but my father taught me when you're plowing, you don't look behind you to see who's behind you before you plow straight. Because if it is right, it is right. I don't ever need to build a coalition in my life. And I want you to hear me. If I do, I hope you point it out to me immediately. If I get mad about something, I'm not going to go stir up a bunch of people to try to get them mad with me so that I can get my way. How childish is that, brethren? How childish. And this other way, I think about this idea of manipulation, where we will go and we will manipulate the system. We'll manipulate the system so we will get our way. Again, I want to ask you, brethren, how childish. I'll be the first to stand up and tell you that I'm not a big fan of rules. I don't like rules. If there is a rule, I believe it should be kept. That may find you to be surprised, but I believe it should be kept. So I don't like a lot of rules. But the more rules we get, the more it just hurts, right? What are we even talking about at this point? But in this idea of rules, I believe that rules should be kept. So we come into a situation where we want to work outside of those rules, then we begin to take the equality that we had and we're no longer equal. I don't like that. But again, I want to state first, I'm not the biggest fan of rules, but what we have here with these mayors is they want to go and they want to manipulate the rules, have a new rule so they can get Daniel, because they wanted to find something about Daniel and they could not. You want to know what this represents in this moment for me? A future moment. When Jesus goes on trial and they try to convict him and they can't find anything spiritually wrong with him. Like, ugh. So they have to do something else. One of the big ten. They have to bear false witness. Had to pay somebody to lie. So in this situation, we have Daniel and they can't find anything wrong. I cannot imagine a man of the age of 16 years old, first of all. When was the last time you looked at a 16-year-old? Maybe Carson, because he's 7'2" and 500 pounds. I don't know. Maybe. When was the last time you looked at a... I love Carson. I don't know when the last time you looked at a 16-year-old and thought, boy, that's a man if I've ever seen one. But in this situation, we have a very young human male that acts a man. And confronted in all of this hostility, this rule they make where he can't pray, he immediately goes to his house and prays. And I want you to hear me here. Later on, Jesus would talk about people praying on street corners. It's one of my favorite passages. It's this idea of don't do things to be seen. Do not do things to draw. Look at me, how holy I am. In a moment where a law is passed that he cannot pray to any god but the king, he goes to his room, which means something because it means he didn't have a bullhorn. He wasn't standing on it. Listen to me. This rule they've made, I'm going to do it. No, he just went to his room and he prayed to the God that he loved and believed in. And also, I cannot imagine the effect of a 16-year-old boy that will future form policy in the world. But as he's thrown into that lion's den, the king goes home and he is hurt. He's so sad he can't sleep and he can't eat. Again, I'm relying on your biblical knowledge. And if you don't believe this, I hope you read chapter 6 this week. And the next morning when he gets up and he runs down, can you imagine? And he opens up the lion's den. Daniel, oh, don't worry about it. God sent an angel. Close their mouths. I'm here. And in this moment, we see for our own personal transitions in life, there comes a moment where we have to stand up to what the world is telling us. But that doesn't mean we have to grab the bullhorn and run down to the corner of the and just start screaming at everybody. I don't know how many of you have had a private school experience. I had that opportunity at Freedon. I consider it an immense blessing for me. I enjoyed my time there. Out of my 9 friends, I've got 5 of them from there. And it was a good experience for me, but I was there for a certain purpose. But there were things that angered me beyond belief about that place. First thing that angered me was the curfew at 12 o'clock. Not because I thought I should stay out later, but because they set a curfew that everybody in the round world stayed up past 12 o'clock. Nobody goes to sleep on that campus before 12 o'clock. I mean, we got to go, and it's not curfew yet. So we never sleep, it seems like. And the other thing is, when people got mad during like a chapel service, they'd get up and go drop kick the back door. Like, look at me. I don't believe what's going on here is right. And I think to myself, like, I can appreciate someone having a conviction and acting on that conviction. What I cannot appreciate is you trying to draw attention to yourself because of some conviction you may have. Daniel had conviction, and he went to his room and he prayed. There's a moment where we need to be emboldened. We've already talked about that. Where we need to stand up and we need to scream to the world, this is what we believe. But more often than not, it's not that moment that we need. We need more moments of private time with God in our lives. That's the moments we need more of in our transitions. Because the times when we don't know what to do, God will give the wisdom for those who seek. And the idea of identity. This is an issue where I feel very bad about talking about it. Because I can point to numerous characteristics and problems that have led to this point. But I don't have all the answers. If I did, I'd be talking about them. And I don't believe the answer is just going backward technologically. I believe the answer is definitely going to be a part of God's people spending more time nurturing the next generation. I believe it's going to take time with God's people spending more time helping their children develop healthy identity. Not telling them all the time who they are, but helping them discover who they are. And then asking them to do what is right in that identity. I think without a doubt, God's people need more time privately in prayer talking about the identity crisis that we are all in. Brethren, this morning as I think about transitions and I think about the idea of choosing a direction within a transition, I know, as I said in my bulletin article, there will be moments when we wake up and we have chosen poorly. We've chosen to act in a way that is not godly. And the only response to that is A, thanksgiving that we woke up and realized that we're in a bad way in this transition. And more importantly, going to the person who has the answers for our life. The person who created us. The person who knew our identity when we were in our mother's womb. The person who created us for good works. The person who will be there in our moment of crisis. The person who will send an angel to minister us and close the angel's mouth. May we all be bold in approaching God when it comes to the idea of mercy, because our God loves mercy and he loves to give mercy to all those who seek it. This morning, where are you? I know you're probably in some type of a transition, one or another. I don't know what that transition may be. It may be a chosen, it may be one that you didn't choose. But my thinking this morning is, how are you walking in that transition? Are you spending that time privately with God? Are you taking the time to be bold when people are confronting you with issues that shouldn't be there? And are you using your words for kindness? Because one thing I'm sure of that we need to do is to spend more time being kind in the world in which we live. This morning, church, if there's something we can do for you, please come now as we stand and sing.